Welcome to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening this week. On the program this time, two guests on two separate topics. In the second half of the show, we'll hear from Vice Admiral Raquel Bono, who just took over as the new director of the Defense Health Agency in November, only the second director to lead that relatively young agency. She spoke recently at the annual Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society conference in Las Vegas about interoperability and making DHA a high-reliability organization. She'll share with us some of what she told the audience there. But we begin this week's show with Lieutenant General Daryl Robertson, the commander of the Air Force's Air Education and Training Command. We invited him on the program to talk about AETC's newly released strategic plan. And AETC, of course, also has a major hand in some of the key changes that are happening in the Air Force right now, including the ongoing effort to grow that service's active duty force from 311,000 airmen to 317,000 by the end of this fiscal year, and the effort to double the number of Air Force drone pilots in the coming year, including by training enlisted pilots for the first time. General Robertson talked to us by phone from AETC's headquarters at Joint Base San Antonio, starting with a little background on the command's various missions.
Air Education and Training Command is responsible for recruiting, for training, and for educating, you know, the world's greatest airmen in the world's greatest Air Force. So AETC has just over 60,000 active duty, Air National Guard, Reserve, and civilian members that make up the command. And the command encompasses 12 installations, 23 wings that are spread across the continental United States, and there are portions that are literally all over the world. We own a total of 1,383 aircraft, from gliders to tankers to transport to the newest fighter, the F-35A. So the world's world trains basically with us, and we get air power started here in AETC. We start with initial training skills. We have 260 different Air Force specialties that we train to, and we train more than 200,000, close to 300,000 students annually to get all that done. Our recruiting service, our ROTC, our OTS, our officer training school, our basic military training, our undergraduate pilot training, and we have a whole part that is what we call Air University for our education. That's us. We're the first to touch the lives of the men and women who volunteer to serve this nation as airmen, and we champion, you know, the continuum of learning throughout an airman's full career. We are the first command, and air power starts with us.
And, sir, we had initially invited you on the program to talk about the new strategic plan that you've just released, and we'll get into more of it. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the pieces that are interwoven with what the chief and the secretary have been talking about over the past week during the budget rollout as it regards regrowing the Air Force a little bit and some of the shortfalls you have in some of the key areas like cyber and maintainers and RPA pilots. Some of that's going to involve sessions and some of the initial training that you just talked about to make sure that we don't have those shortfalls in the future. So if you could talk a little bit about what AETC is doing in those specific areas that are critical to what the Air Force is doing right now.
We're doing many things. The bottom line is that we're having to adjust real time to accommodate the current goals that we have. And our guys have put a plan in place, you know, that's going to meet that. But so I'm proud to say, you know, the Air Force has met its recruiting goal for the past 15 years. And our goal in fiscal year 16 is, you know, 30,000 plus, which includes a 37% increase for enlisted accessions and a 230% increase for officer accessions. So it's a big challenge. And some money has already been adjusted, some resources. to plus up our marketing budget specifically was added because we're going to need to get the word out to more people to increase the number of sessions that we're going to have. So this will be a challenge, but I'm a glass half full kind of guy and see the challenges as opportunities. And based on what I'm hearing from our staff, we're going to be able to meet that requirement. I'm confident of it, and we're doing everything we can to inspire, to engage, and to recruit this next generation of America's airmen.
I want to make sure I heard you right. 230% increase in officer accessions? If so, why did that jump so much?
So, you know, while that 230% sounds like a large number, we're talking a fairly small number of officer accessions, but a lot of that is going into our efforts regarding RPAs. We're doubling the number of RPA pilots in our Air Force over this next year. And, of course, those are coming as officers in that particular area. The real challenge for us is actually on the enlisted side of the house. That's where the larger numbers-wise of airmen are going to be coming in. And so that's our challenge on both parts. But like I said, we're confident we're going to be able to make it.
Right. Since we're talking about RPA pilots already, let's stick with that. What's AETC's role in making sure that those enlisted pilots, those new enlisted pilots that are coming in for the first time, can actually perform up to the level that the Air Force needs?
Sure. Yeah. So this enlisted RPA pilot force is a new effort by our Air Force. So we're looking in how to solve some of our you know, manning concerns and demands to meet requirements on the RPA side of the house by bringing our enlisted airmen into the equation. So AETC, really, I mean, we're at the forefront of Air Force RPAs. And ramping up RPA production, as I mentioned, we're doubling it, and innovating initial undergraduate pilot RPA training will help ensure the long-term health of our RPA community. This has been identified through surveys and research, and the Air Force has determined we need to do this. So we're moving out, and we will be able to ensure that we can meet the continual RPA demands of our combatant commanders, because that's really what we're trying to make sure we can meet. So last December, you know, the Air Force decided to integrate enlisted Air Force into flying operations. And we're going to do that through the RQ-4, the Global Hawk program. So we are directly supporting this initiative, and we will be working with the operational side of the house, ACC, by training these enlisted pilots alongside their officer counterparts. And we're going to be doing it right here where I'm stationed at Randolph Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. And the 558th Flying Training Squadron at Joint Base San Antonio-Randolph here is the home for the Air Force's only undergraduate remotely piloted aircraft training program. So they'll all be coming here. And those RPA pilots, you know, train from 6 to 7 months here at Randolph. And then they go to a formal training unit associated with Air Combat Command for 4 to 5 months. So it takes about a year before becoming an operational RPA pilot. So we're working the details now. And this initial group of enlisted RPA airmen will be our test, if you will, to see and make sure we've got it put together the right way, and the training is going to be where we need it. And so it's really exciting. It's a transformative time for our airmen, certainly to be in the RPA community. And our enlisted force is the best enlisted force in the world, and I'm confident they'll be able to perform this job exceedingly well.
Good. That's Lieutenant General Darrell Roberson, the commander of the Air Force's Air Education and Training Command. We'll come back and talk more about the hub-and-spoke recruiting strategy the Air Force is using to increase its active duty force over the coming year, and AETC's new strategic plan after a quick break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu, continuing our conversation with Lieutenant General Darrell Roberson, the commander of the Air Force's Air Education and Training Command, about AETC's newly updated strategic plan, which covers various topics, including recruiting. So, sir, maybe you can talk a little bit more broadly about the recruiting climate and how you think it looks today, and whether it's been improved or changed by improving economic conditions. That was something that was specifically referenced in the plan.
Sure. You know, Jared, as we talked about briefly, recruiting is always a challenge, but we've met the challenge, you know, as mentioned, over the last 15 years. And it's becoming more of a challenge because the number of Americans that actually qualify for military service is becoming smaller and smaller. So all the services and all of the premier organizations in our country are really ending up looking for those same talented young Americans. So I'm proud of our Air Force recruiters and the quality of the people, you know, that they continue to find to serve our nation. We vie, as I said, for the same candidates as industry, Silicon Valley, the colleges, other military services. We need high-quality volunteers, and our nation demands, but, you know, the numbers for those who qualify is slimming due to eliminators that include things such as, you know, academic shortcomings. Unfortunately, criminal records are reviewed. Health issues are sometimes a factor, and financial problems can be another part of the struggles that we have to overcome. And when our nation's economy is strong, like it's doing better these days, we're seeing a lot of our airmen choosing other options besides the military service. I mean, other people, Americans, choosing other options besides service in our Air Force. So we work hard through our recruiters to find, you know, the amazing men and women by showing them all the Air Force offers them. The service to our country, responsibility and trust, the professional and leadership development opportunities that we offer, our technical training and the educational opportunities, as well as just literally traveling around the country and around the world and seeing that. We have instituted some new efforts with our recruiting side of the house, what we call a hub and spoke architecture. So we took a look at our system as a whole and have decided to put in this hub and spoke architecture into our recruiting service. So we're calling it flight-centric transformation, and it's a new concept in the structure, and it's intended to streamline our enlisted accessions recruiting. So one-person offices, which we had many of those around the country, do not optimize the level of professional development for our recruiting force, and it doesn't offer the best chance for success for all of our airmen in addition to the recruits that we're bringing in. So we've gone or going to this under, you know, the hub and spoke concept. What will happen is our Air Force recruiters are assigned regionally together in a consolidated office rather than having multiple one-person offices scattered throughout. And so consolidating these offices strengthens our core skills as a profession. It saves the nation money by consolidating valuable resources. And we're confident that our assessment that the flight centric transformation will lead to better training, more precise execution of our daily tasks out in the recruiting environment, greater ownership, and better family support for all of our airmen and their families, and ultimately will produce higher team performance for our recruiters.
Just so I understand the hub and spoke thing a little bit more, so the spokes in this analogy are able to move around a little bit more freely throughout regions. If that's the case, where are the hubs?
So we have consolidated our hubs into major centers, and there's I don't remember exactly how many we have right now, but and how many we're going to.
Sure.
But the bottom line is that in the major areas where we have success with recruiting, a lot of times these are close to cities, major city areas. So they will be the hubs, and they'll be placed regionally across the country. So we'll have one hub in the Northeast. We'll have one hub in the Southeast. We'll have one hub in the Mideast, middle part of our country for our Air Force. And so those hubs will be centric, and then we'll have spokes that radiate from them. And those hubs will be responsible for taking care of our recruiters and their requirements and our families in a way that we haven't been able to do in the past.
The plan that you've just released kind of nests within several of the larger strategic documents that the Air Force has just released, including the U.S. Air Force Strategic Master Plan.
Right.
Can you talk about how this works with the broader strategic documents the Air Force is working with right now, and in particular the Human Capital Annex, which particularly impacts you?
Yeah. So, you know, we deliberately fielded this AETC strategic plan so that it would nest appropriately into our Air Force plan, our Department of Defense plan. And so the 2016 strategic plan literally nests conveniently within the national security strategy, our national military strategy, and our Air Force strategy. The levels of strategy enable us to tailor our capabilities to complement and support the national objectives, as you would expect for our Air Force and for AETC. In the past 2 years, the Air Force published documents describing how it will, you know, be able to continue meeting the Air Force's mission into the 21st century. As the foundation of air power for America, AETC performs a unique role that I described earlier that directly links us to the broader Air Force mission. Air power does start here, and it's not just a mantra in AETC. It's plain, it's fact, and it's foundational. We are the starting point to nearly every facet of the Air Force, and I've outlined several goals in this strategic plan, what I'm calling my big rocks, for the command to tackle in the coming years. These goals range widely from infusing the profession of arms, center of excellence, products and materials into everything that we do in AETC, and it infuses our Air Force core values. We bake it into every aspect of training and education, and we will continue to expand the F-35 with our partner nations. Again, a very strategic and important goal that we have that nests importantly into the national security strategy.
We've talked about some of the broader Air Force manpower shortfalls that AETC is going to be responsible for addressing, but as I read your plan, there are some manpower shortfalls that are sort of internal to the Air Force's broader training apparatus that you also have some concerns about, like ROTC and OTS. Can you talk about those a little bit and what you're doing to try and address them?
Yeah, so this was definitely one of our focus areas, and as you read in the strategic plan, two of my immediate focus areas include addressing our shortage of manning in ROTC and OTS, our officer training school, as well as our military training leaders, that what we call MTLs.
That's a concept that I'm not sure a lot of people understand. Can you talk first a little bit about what military training leaders are?
Sure. So what happens is, as our airmen come into the Air Force, they go to what's called basic military training. And after they finish their basic military training, we give them what we call an Air Force specialty code. This is the area that they're going to specialize in, the work areas that they're going to be taught more about. We send them to technical training after their basic military training. And in every technical training school that we have in AETC, we assign a military training leader. So this is an NCO that is going to be responsible for anywhere from 5 to 25 people, our airmen, as they go through the technical training courses to become qualified to do the mission that they're going to need to do with the Air Force. So these military training leaders are like coaches. They keep them on track. They help them with issues and concerns as they're going through their tech training. And right now, we're a little bit short on that manning, but we're working hard to increase that area, and it's one of my focus areas. And those focus areas are not solely just on increasing the numbers of airmen in those positions. They're also focused on, you know, what they're going to be doing to our youngest airmen. So they're going to be focusing on professional development of these folks, of not only the cadre, but of our airmen. And we're working hard to build this military training leader institutional health to the point where we need it to be. We think we're a little bit short. We need to work on it, so we're going to address that. We're taking advantage of our total force. for this issue and shortfalls. We're reaching out to our Air National Guard and Reserve Airmen to help fill some of those ROTC and OTS cadre manning shortages that we have. And we intend to roll out various professional development opportunities for ROTC and our officer training school so that they can influence in ways these and help mold our newest, you know, officers and airmen as they come into the Air Force. On the enlisted side, you know, not only do our MTLs play a crucial role with the technical training, but we're increasing accessions. So with the projected student load increases that we have to account for, we also have to ensure that we have enough of these MTLs and we don't overburden them as we increase the accessions. But the best, you know, if we're stretched thin with MTLs, we run the risk of overworking, undertraining, and under-resourcing these vital airmen, and we won't do that. We need to make sure that doesn't happen. That's what's building, you know, that's why we want to build this MTL institutional health, and everything is interrelated. It all works together, and so we're confident we're going to be able to get to where we need to be as we increase our accessions.
And finally, sir, we don't talk a lot about military hardware on Federal News Radio, but the trainer aircraft are pretty important to your entire mission, and you have some specific challenges there that you kind of outline in your strategic plan, one involving sort of the legacy T-6 and the future TX. You want to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that you face there and what you're doing to address them, both in the legacy fleet and in the future acquisition? What are your most important challenges long-term and near-term?
You know, the trainer that we're working and concerned about is the T-38. And so when you reference the TX, that's kind of what we're getting at. It's our advanced pilot training aircraft. It's the next generation trainer. It's called TX because we don't have a number for it yet. But bottom line is our current trainer for fighters and bombers is the T-38. And I just flew one a couple of weeks ago, and it was 55 years old, the airplane was. So this thing has been around for a long time. We've been able to update it to a certain extent to keep up with fourth generation aircraft, but now we're flying fifth generation aircraft more and more, and it requires us to be able to upgrade our training capability to match what's going to come about with the fifth generation aircraft. So the TX is really our new effort to replace that trainer with an aircraft that's going to be able to meet those requirements. And we're specifically focusing on, you know, increased capability, adaptability, and affordability of this TX. And so this is a very important program for our United States Air Force, and it's one of those foundational pieces that could affect us literally for the next 50 years.
That's Lieutenant General Darrell Roberson, the commander of the Air Force's Air Education and Training Command, speaking to us by phone from his office at Joint Base San Antonio. We'll post a link to the new strategic plan we've been talking about at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. When we come back, we'll switch gears and talk about defense healthcare with Vice Admiral Raquel Bono, the new director of the Defense Health Agency. That's next on Federal News Radio. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serville.